Louis was first aboard the Longshot. He was not surprised to find his feet trying to dance on Nereid's rock surface. Louis knew how to move in low gravity, but his hind brain stupidly expected gravity to change as he entered the Longshot's airlock. Braced for the change, he stumbled and almost fell when it didn't come. "I know they had induced gravity then," he grumbled as he moved into the cabin. "Oh." The cabin was primitive. There were hard right angles everywhere, suitable for bumping knees and elbows. Everything was bulkier than necessary. Dials were badly placed. But more than primitive, the cabin was small. There had been induced gravity when the Longshot was built, but even in a ship a mile wide, there had been no room for the machinery. There was barely room for a pilot. Instrument board and mass indicator, a kitchen slot, a crash couch, and a space behind the couch where a man might wedge himself with his head bent to the low ceiling. Louis braced himself in that space and opened the Kazin's variable sword to 3 feet. Speaker to animals came aboard, moving in self-conscious slow motion. He climbed past Louis without slowing, up into the overhead compartment. The overhead compartment had been a recreation room for the ship's single pilot. Exercise machinery and a reading screen had been ripped out, and 3 new crash couches installed. Speaker climbed into one of these. Now Louis followed him up the rungs, one-handed. Keeping the variable sword unostentatiously in sight, he closed the cover on the Kazin's crash couch and flipped a knife switch. The crash couch became a mirror surface egg. Inside, no time would pass until Louis turned off the stasis field. If the ship should happen to ram an antimatter asteroid, even the general product's hull would be ionized vapor, but the Kazin's crash couch would not lose its mirror finish. Louis relaxed. It had all been like a kind of ritualistic dance, but its purpose was real enough. The Kazin had good reason to steal the ship. The task had not altered that. Speaker must not be given an opportunity. Louis returned to the pilot's cabin. He used the ship-to-suit circuit. "Come on in." Something over 100 hours later, Louis Wu was outside the solar system. Chapter 5. Rosette. There are singularities in the mathematics of hyperspace. One such singularity surrounds every sufficiently large mass in the Einsteinian universe. Inside of these singularities, ships can travel faster than light. Inside, they disappear if they try it. Now the Longshot, some 8 light-hours from Sol, was beyond Sol's local singularity. And Louis Wu was in free fall. There was tension in his gonads and discomfort in his diaphragm, and his stomach thought he wanted to belch. These sensations would pass. There was a paradoxical urge to fly. He had flown many times in freefall, in the huge transparent bubble of the outbound hotel, which circled Earth's moon. Here he would smash something vital if he so much as flapped his arms. He had chosen to accelerate outward under 2 gravities. For something like 5 days he had worked and eaten and slept in the pilot's crash couch. Despite the excellent facilities of the couch, he was dirty and unkempt. Despite 50 hours of sleep, he was exhausted. Louis felt his future foreshadowed. For him, the keynote of the expedition would be discomfort. The sky of deep space looked not so much different from the lunar night sky. In the solar system, the planets add little to a naked-eye view. One remarkably bright star glared in the galactic south, and that star was Sol. Louis used flywheel controls. The Longshot rotated, and stars went by underneath his feet. 27, 312, 1,000 even. Nessus had given him these coordinates just before Louis closed the crash couch on him. They were the location of the puppeteer migration. And now Louis realized that this was not in the direction of either of the clouds of Magellan. The puppeteer had lied to him. But, Louis thought, it was about 200 light-years away, and it was along the galactic axis. Perhaps the puppeteers had chosen to move out of the galaxy along the shortest direction, then travel above the plane of the galaxy to reach the lesser cloud. Thus they would avoid interstellar debris, suns, dust clouds, hydrogen concentrations. It didn't particularly matter. Louis's hands, like a pianist's about to begin a concert, hovered over the instrument panel, descended. The Longshot vanished. Louis kept his eyes away from the transparent floor. He had already stopped wondering why there were no covers for all that window space. The sight of the blind spot had driven good men mad, and there were those who could take it. The Longshot's pilot must have been such a man. He looked instead at the mass pointer, a transparent sphere above the instrument panel, with a number of blue lines radiating from its center. This one was oversized, despite limitations on cabin space. Louis settled back and watched the lines. They changed visibly. Louis could fix his eye on a line and watch it sweep slowly across the curvature of the sphere. It was unusual and unnerving. At normal hyperdrive, speeds of the lines would remain fixed for hours. Louis flew with his left hand on the panic switch. The kitchen slot to his right fed him odd-tasting coffee and, later, a hand meal that came apart in his hands, into separate strata of meat and cheese and bread and some kind of leaf. The auto kitchen must be hundreds of years overdue for reprogramming. Radio lines in the mass indicator grew large and swept upward like the second hand on a watch and shrank to nothing. A fuzzy blue line at the bottom of the sphere grew long and longer. Louis pulled the panic switch. An unfamiliar red giant glared beneath his feet. "Too fast," Louis snarled. "Too tonsh fast." In any normal ship, you only had to check the mass indicator every 6 hours or so. On the Longshot, you hardly dared blink. Louis let his eyes drop to the bright, fuzzy red disk and its starry background. "Tonsh, I'm already out of known space." He wheeled the ship to see the stars. A foreign sky streamed beneath him. "They're mine, all mine," Louis chortled, rubbing his hands together. On sabbaticals, Louis Wu was his own entertainment. The red star returned to view, and Louis let it swing another 90 degrees. He'd let his ship get too close to the star, and now he'd have to circle around it. He was then an hour and a half on his way. He was 3 hours on his way when he dropped out again. The foreign stars didn't bother him. City lights drowned the starlight over most of the Earth, and Louis Wu had been raised a flatlander. He had not seen a star until he was 26. He checked to be sure he was in clear space, he closed covers on instrument panels, and then, finally, he stretched. "Wow, my eyes feel like boiled onions." Releasing himself from the crash web, he floated, flexing his left hand. For 3 hours he had flown with that hand closed on the hyperdrive switch. From elbow to fingertips, it felt like a single cramp. Under the ceiling were rungs for isometric exercises. Louis used them. The kinks left his muscles, but he was still tired. Wake Teela? It would be nice to talk to her now. Lovely idea there. Next time I go on sabbatical, I'll take a woman in stasis. Get the best of both worlds. But he looked and felt like something washed from a flooded graveyard, unfit for polite company. Oh, well. He should not have let her board the Longshot. Not for his own sake. He was glad enough that she had stayed over those 2 days. It had been like the story of Louis Wu and Paula Cherenkov, rewritten for a happy ending. Perhaps it had been better. Yet there was something shallow about Teela. It wasn't only her age. Louis's friends were of all ages, and some of the youngest were very deep indeed. Certainly they suffered most, as if hurting were part of the learning process, which it probably was. No, there was a lack of empathy in Teela, a lack of the ability to feel someone else's pain. Yet she could sense another's pleasure, and respond to pleasure, and create pleasure. She was a marvelous lover, painfully beautiful, almost new to the art, sensuous as a cat, and startlingly uninhibited. None of which would qualify her as an explorer. Teela's life had been happy and dull. Twice she had fallen in love, and twice she had been first to tire of the affair. She had never been in a bad stress situation, never been really hurt. When the time came, when Teela found her first genuine emergency, she would probably panic. "But I picked her as a lover," said Louis to himself. "Damn Nessus." If Teela had ever been found in a stress situation, Nessus would have rejected her as unlucky. It had been a mistake to bring her. She would be a liability. He would spend too much of his time protecting her when he should be protecting himself. What kinds of stress situations might they face? The puppeteers were good businessmen. They did not overpay. The Longshot was a fee of unheard-of value. Louis had the chilly suspicion that they would earn it. "Sufficient unto the day," he said to himself. And he returned to his crash couch and slept for an hour under the sleep headset. Waking, he swung the ship into line and dropped back into the blind spot.